Hi, everyone. Okay, this should be easy in the room of academics. How many people have submitted a paper to a conference and gotten back reviews that made you feel really angry? Excellent. So we'll all like this talk. So to roll back, I'm actually going to start talking about the United States Postal Service. No, this is not because historically they were the people who used to deliver reviews to you, but more because in the 80s and the 90s, there was this incongruous event where a number of postal workers went on rampages. And this was strange enough that it actually got called going postal. And when they did a survey of why these things were, some of the factors that they found caused this were people who had high work stress, who felt that they had been unjustly put down upon, and had an identifiable target. Is this the kind of state of mind you're in when you receive a review that reads like this? The problem about critical reviews is that despite the fact that as human beings, we often know that they are well warranted and are the best metrics for improving our own work, we still don't like them. And we just take badly to criticism. And if we know the identity of a person who's written a bad review for us, this leads to all sorts of complications which could come up. I'll try and illustrate this. This is how the traditional review process works. You write a paper, and some people on the program committee review it. You get back some reviews. Some more of these may be negative. And academia tends to be small. So who a person... The balance of power between a submitter and a reviewer changes very rapidly from one conference to the other. So in this case, we've gone to the point where we've switched around. And at this point, despite our best efforts to be balanced, it's easy for resentment to creep in and there to be some kind of bias in this reviewing. And one of the mechanisms that's most popularly used to try and get around this is we use blind reviews. So you receive reviews. As a person who's been in the field, you can probably make some kind of estimate as to who's most likely to have written these reviews. You can get it to some subset of the program committee. But it's hard to pinpoint it and blame one person with any great degree of confidence. Or at least so, that's what we'd like to believe. As a community, we've talked about how other communities deal with data disclosure. We've seen how large anonymized data sets can be reversed and that. Have we actually looked at our own anonymity practices with an equal degree of critical analysis? Well, here's the kind of attack that we see is possible. Writing styles tend to be as unique as fingerprints. Now, I'm not a literature student. I can tell Shakespeare apart from Joyce, apart from Stephanie Meyer. And this is without reading Stephanie Meyer. So, now, despite the fact that technical writing doesn't lead itself to the same kind of nuances as creative writing, there are still enough linguistic styles that tells that come into reviews. And as a person, if you've read reviews from a person, you know the kind of style, it's possible that you may be able to identify them. So how would we look at going about doing something like this? Well, as somebody who's completely on the outside, people have professional web pages. In academia, people are encouraged to publish, so you have lots of theses, blog posts, journal articles, things like that. So these would be good sources of data. But is there something better we can do? Are there any other sources people can think of? Well, there are several people in this room who've been on program committees, probably several of them who've been on several program committees. And as a PC member, you can see unblinded reviews written by your peers. These form really good samples to train yourself on, to think about when you're receiving a review, because people tend to write reviews of similar length, styles, and when you receive a review, if you've seen enough of them written and when you know what they write, these form really good training data. So, as an example, let's pick on Chair Patrick McDaniel. He's been very prolific. How many people would you guess that he's actually sat on PCs with in the last 5 years?
60, 70.
Patrick, do you have?
No.
The asterisk is because this is a conservative number. There were some. We went to the website, and there were some conferences where there are huge PCs with lots of sub-PCs, but there was no demarcation on the website as to who was on which sub-PC. We dropped these. So this is the kind of number. Now, In fact, some of you, these are the people who are supposed ostensibly in the room from the hot sec public listing of people attending. So you might find yourself over here. So in isolation, this number doesn't give us very much. So let me try and put this in another way. Not to suggest that Patrick would ever do something like this, but if he were to have an evil clone who had access to the same reviews and was submitting to a conference, a top security conference this year, what percentage of the PC would he potentially be able to identify only on the basis of having served with them before? Well, so, okay, he's on the Oakland PC, so he's got potentially reviews for everyone. Usenix, that's about 70%, close to 60% for NDSS and around 55% for CCI. These are conservative numbers because when you actually get reviews back, you'll have conflicts, you have multi-authored publications, and if you stack up lots of authors who've been prolific, these numbers could go a lot higher. So we've talked about collecting reviews, but really, what are we going to do with these reviews? I mean, you can look at them and eyeball them and try and get some kind of an estimate, but how would we try and automate this process? Well, this has thankfully been solved by people who do machine learning. They have this voodoo system called classification. We don't pretend to understand it. As a very quick overview, you have a set of data that you know belongs to a certain class. In our case, reviews that you know have been written by an author. And you train your classifier to learn features to be able to identify it. And then when you get unlabeled samples, in our case, the kind of reviews that you've received back from a conference, it tries and matches these features probabilistically to guess who the author would be. So let's look at this visually. Here's a tiger. It's orange. It has black stripes. Here's a lion. It's yellow. It's got a mane. This is our training data. We've got some kind of features. The more of these we have, the more confidence our classifier gets. Let's go testing. Tiger, lion, tiger, lions and tigers, and bears. Oh my. Well, classification is hard. Sometimes you get it wrong. And this is why, despite this not being a new kind of attack, these kind of classification techniques have really remained in the domain of experts in this area. We wanted to look at, as time progresses, technology improves, and we wanted to look at how, as complete outsiders who didn't understand this kind of thing, if we could take off-the-shelf classification tools and toolkits and write something which would classify reviews. So, we use the NLTK toolkit in Python. We use the simplest classifier, the naive Bayes classifier. We treat it completely like a black box, so we make no changes to the actual toolkit. What kind of features do we use to try and identify authors? Well, we use unigrams and bigrams and trigrams. Bigrams and trigrams are word sequences of length 2 and 3. And rather than scoring these purely on the basis of frequency, we use something called TF-IDF. That is term frequency inverse document frequency. This is a way that something is scored more highly if it's pretty high frequency in an author's text, but low frequency in some other author's text. Because this prevents our reviews from getting clustered on the basis of content rather than on authorial styles. So we want to try and filter that sort of stuff out. So that's why we use it. So what are the data sets we use? Well, two of these, the top two, are from classes at UBC. These were run as review-style classes. Everyone wrote reviews into a hot CRP system. The bottom two are actual conferences. We were a little worried about how we would get data, so we actually just wrote to the PC and the chairs. And surprisingly, a very large percentage of them were quite happy to have us use the data and were pretty curious about the results. So a big thank you to them for participating. I'd like to draw your attention to Conference 1. It has a significantly smaller review length. I'm just going to come back to that in a minute. So, I've talked about this being possible and how simple the classifier is. Let's see how well it does. The y-axis is the accuracy of the classifier. Higher numbers mean we've been able to de-anonymize a greater set of reviews. The x-axis shows how this changes with given a review data set when we vary the amount of data we use for training it. So the top two, those are our internal data sets. Those are early. And here are the two conferences. Notice one of them is significantly lower than the other. This is conference one. And this is the one which had significantly shorter review lengths. Now, one of the things we found that it wasn't just the pure review length, but also the high amount of variance between the authors. So we had some authors who had a lot more text, 600, 800 word reviews, and others who had 50 and 100-word reviews. So when we call a lot of the really short reviews out, we have another data set, which sort of comes in line with the other conference. So I think it's just a set of having more data. So what are the kind of features that make you identifiable? Well, here you have visualization with an S, British or S American spelling, misspelt words, or you have connectives, people who write their things in prose versus paragraph, and the way people criticize and praise papers tends to remain pretty common across their papers. At this point, I'd once again like to reiterate that our classifier was a pretty simple classifier. Anyone who's a domain expert or spends significantly more time will have better results than that. And yet, even with this, we show results that seem to say that anonymity as we know it in the review system is potentially dead. And so we've been thinking about what kind of countermeasures we could use. Well, one of them is to obfuscate the features of an author. That is that you play around with it enough that you can't quite recognize the person, but you try and maintain as much semantic meaning as possible. Another is to normalize your entire data set. That is, this really takes from the Chesterton view of the best place to hide a leaf is in the forest. So you try and make everybody sound similar. You regress it, the entire data set to some kind of common set of features which all the authors have to make each individual one more difficult to identify. The other is, if you know the kind of features that an author is using, can you pretend to be them? So one of the ways for obfuscation we looked at was language translation. We take our text and we run it through Bing Translate for an English to German cycle. We find that this does if you run it over the entire data set, this significantly reduces the classification, about 20% drop in accuracy. If you do it for only a single author, you become perfectly identifiable, both to automatic and human beings. How well does this, let's look at it. Well, here's a line from a review. You run it through one cycle. It's sort of still potentially usable. As you do more, by the time you hit a fixed point, you're actually advocating that you have a responsibility to expose sensitive data. This is probably not what our reviewer had in mind. So, wouldn't it be really nice if we had something in the review system which would give us features that we could try and mimic? Well, Linux has a tool like this where you have a line and you just tell it what you want to sound like, and here are examples. But, like, you know, this really isn't, like, you know, subtle enough for what we want to use. So I wanted to see whether it would be possible for me to impersonate my August advisors if I knew what they sounded like. So here are some features from correspondence email that we had from Andy and Bill. And maybe if Andy were writing a review, it would sound like this. Maybe if Bill were writing the same thing, maybe it would look like this. Obviously, these are exaggerated, but you wouldn't need to. But my basic point is that if you know what something sounds like and the basis it's using for classification, it's not that hard to try and beat the system. So, you know, I'd just like to, at this point, say that currently the techniques we're using for anonymization are not sufficient for the kind of use that we're expecting anonymity in the review system to give us. And it's possible that, despite we've played around these kind of countermeasures, but as classification improves, it's entirely possible these countermeasures won't hold up very well either. In that case, the correct answer may be to actually think about this on more social terms rather than using things all go to an open review system. But this is something that, as a community, we need to think about, because it's not just the fact that we've lost anonymity, which, disturbing as it is the most disturbing thing. It's the fact that you've retroactively lost anonymity that you believed you had, which I think is something is more dangerous and something we need to think about. Thank you.